Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We'll get to some of your comments, as we do throughout the course of the morning, of course. Dogs are barking non-stop. Oh, I read that one. Yeah, that was someone struggling with dogs barking. I'll read it again. Dogs are barking non-stop in the Ballyrain-Gortley area. It's very annoying. I keep my windows closed and still hear them. Can you please plead again with dog owners to attend to the dogs? Otherwise, we'll have no alternative to report it to the dog warden. Nothing worse than constant barking. Right. David Farrell joins us on the show now. David, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Right, okay, so you were off on your hollybobs. Hopefully you had a wonderful time. But then, of course, it comes a time where we have to face the reality of going home. It can be good fun, but also going back to the weather, maybe sometimes a bit of a nightmare. But yours, your nightmare was a little bit different because you have been leveled with a significant bill. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, we got our bill from 3 Ireland about 5 or 6 days ago, and it was over €100 more than the normal bill for a month. So I queried it, and they said it was because we'd been in Albania. But in fact, we were in Corfu. We were in Corfu for the full 2 weeks of our lovely holiday. We never stepped off the beach. We never went anywhere near Albania. So I queried it, and they basically rejected any proposal to waive the fee. And they said it was my fault, that we should have recognized that we were linked up to Albania because our thing was set automatically. Basically, I've learned an important lesson as a bit of a dinosaur, which is there are certain things about mobile phones I didn't understand that I now understand a bit more of. But it's a shame that I would have been stuck with this bill in the light of my inability to understand modern technology.
Yeah, but that being said, we have to be helped along the way in our understanding of it. Sometimes things are purposely complicated, but it never works in our favour. You know what I mean? By your own admittance, lack of understanding of this technology, you didn't come home with €150 credit in your It's always when we need to understand things more, it's always at the advantage of those that perhaps should inform us better.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, particularly as I went through all the stages with the person at the end of the telephone, in which they said, you were in Albania. I said, no, we weren't in Albania. Ah, you're on the high seas. No, we weren't on the high seas. We might have taken a water taxi to a nearby restaurant, but that was as far as we went, never more than 50 meters from the coast. And then it culminated in them saying, well, sorry, the Albanian mast was more powerful than the Greek mast, and therefore it's your fault. But my point back to them was, I never left the European Union. My wife and I were always at all stages in Greece, on the island of Corfu. We physically were never in Albania. And so I've since learned, because I've seen the Twitter feed since I posted something yesterday, that this is a regular occurrence when you're on the borders of the European Union. And it just seems to me wrong that even if I physically, I said to them, I can send you my credit card receipts, I can prove categorically that I never left the European Union. Yeah. They simply said, no, unfortunately, That's the way it is.
And maybe the irony is that if it came down to a criminal investigation, it is they themselves, with their information in terms of geolocation, would be able to confirm also that you never left the European Union.
Well, presumably, yeah. I mean, they have the technology. They can see
you'd be triangulated to where you say you were. I got stuck with the high seas one as well. I think it was on a boat in Malta. Came out of a bolt out of the blue. So, I mean, there's a PR issue here as well. You know, I think it'd be very much in their interest to say, you know, but they could open the floodgates as well. So, I mean, you've switched to Vodafone. Have they said anything since? I know Conor Pope's a consumer advocate. Any word of them relenting at all?
Well, actually, yes. In the last 5 minutes, just before I came on air, I was contacted about an hour ago by 3 Ireland Care, another Twitter feed, asking me for the details. I sent the details and they came back and they said that they'd pay half the difference. So it's a nice parting gift as we've just moved, as you said, we've just moved to Vodafone. But it's nice them to at least give me that gesture.
But I think really, David, this may have started off as you sort of advocating on behalf of yourself. I think what it's actually turned into is a really, albeit costly to you, useful opportunity for people to make sure that if you're travelling abroad, you know, ensure that you know that because we get a ton of texts as well, and we don't know what they're for necessarily, but just to make sure that you haven't strayed onto, I can't imagine there's many examples like yours, but there's a lot of people go to Corfu, so just make sure you stay in the local network as best as you can.
This is it. This is what the more tech-savvy people on Twitter have been telling me, that I should not have it on. I mean, the default is always automatic, that I should change that to manual. And then as soon as I arrive, put it on. Because that's the thing. We were caught out within 24 hours. We got a warning saying we'd reached our limits. So we immediately went off data roaming. But in that 24-hour period, that's when the damage was done. So it happens really quickly.
Yeah.
So the lesson I've learned is go manual.
Of course. And it happens really, you know, if you have certain settings like backing up photos or automatic downloads of series on Netflix, and you don't have that on Wi-Fi only, you could be, yeah, I mean, you took a hit, but it could have been an awful lot worse as well, depending on how your phone's generally set up, David.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it was kind of lucky in the end. It wasn't as bad as it might have been.
So now you have to put on social media for a couple of days. You know, don't have my phone for 3 or 4 days. If you need to get me on here. I don't know why people do that, but they do anyway. All right, listen, take care of yourself. Thanks for that. Glad to see that there was some compromise. They met you halfway, but as you say, unfortunately, at this point, it's a parting gift.
Exactly, but... Yeah, exactly. But thank you. And anyway, lesson learned.
And you've learned the lesson for at least one or two people listening, I hope. Thank you, David Farrell there. He was out in Corfu, but his phone was connected to the Albania network and took a big hit. 150 quid was his welcoming home present. But in fairness to Three, because it is his fault, right? Because you get the text saying, welcome to Albania. We know that along the border because we're constantly, you know, you drive into Strabane and it's like, welcome to the UK. Do you know? So you know it's there. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be joined by Minister for Disabilities, Department of Children Equality, Disability Integration and Youth, Minister Anne Rabbitt, in just a couple of moments. And as I mentioned, we're joined in studio now by Minister Anne Rabbitt, who's Minister for Disabilities, Department of Children Equality, Disability Integration and Youth. It's a broad, you're very welcome to the show and to the county. It's a broad remit, Minister, and obviously you have a big team across it all.
Yeah, it is. And I suppose my main focus within that long title is the disability, but not just the disability, the inclusion and equality piece of it, because I do believe disabilities, all people with disabilities have rights. So I think moving us from the Department of Equality or Health over to the Department of Equality, I think that was a really positive move for people with disabilities, because we were really probably the Cinderella in the Department of Health, because we also became the piggy bank. They kept rating us for doing everything else when they ran short of money. So hence disabilities was always left on the back foot. Moving it to the other department, it's the main player within that other department. We have the largest budget. Minister Gorman is the senior minister who looks after everything to do from youth to direct provision to the Ukrainian response. But disabilities sits solely with myself.
And we hope, don't we, in this country or in any modern country, to get to the point whereby we aren't constantly fighting for the equality that everybody's entitled to. And it does feel like that sometimes, that we're constantly, it's like whack-a-mole of issues.
And I'd say it feels like that a lot of the time. If we're to be very fair, it would be wrong of me to sit here in front of you this morning and sort of glaze over as if it's the perfect country to live in if you have a disability. It's not, actually. But we are trying our best. We're trying to respond as a government. And as I said, that first step is a real recognition that we don't see disabilities just as a health issue. We see it as a rights-based issue. That's a real dial change. Also recognising that disabilities is just not siloed anymore into just day services. There's a range of disabilities. The acquiring of a disability over the age of 18, you could have been in employment, you could have been in education, you could have been in any walk of life and you can get struck with a disability. It's the understanding of the range of disability. And I suppose really, that's what the High Court showed us a few years ago when the primary medical certs, that they said that the vision or the description of disabilities in this state is too narrow. So that, along with my government colleagues, we're trying to change the dial on.
Now, I could list a series of examples whereby there are inequalities. And listeners would be very familiar with these. I have no doubt people like you, Anne, and people in your position are very well intended in wanting to see change, wanting to see change implemented, wanting to get rid of the inequalities. But it seems what you want and getting things changed on the ground, it seems an incredibly difficult process and an incredibly slow process. And I'm sure you share some of the same frustrations. So what do we do? How do we move forward whereby you can have well-intended people at the top that are really well-resourced in terms of, you know, what money's being allocated to what? And actually people going, you know what? I can feel the benefits of what Minister Rabbit's talking about. You know, that sort of...
Yeah, and to be honest with you, yeah, there's a lot of well-intended people, but well-intended doesn't deliver services. So to me, it's about the delivering of services. So my primary focus, and I don't apologise about it, is actually having enough resources so as we can train and recruit enough therapists so as we can give that early intervention for children. Because if you get that early intervention, you possibly have a better pathway within education and transitioning into post-primary and into further education. And we also need to be very ambitious in relation to employment and the access to employment and resourcing employers with actually being able to recruit people with disabilities. Amazing thing during COVID was, and talking to a number of people was, when they were able to do an interview, they did it across the screen. So nobody knew whether you wheeled in, hopped in, or how you got in. Yeah. But actually they judged you on your ability to perform on that interview space, not on actually how you looked or anything else. So it just showed to me that there's an appetite there to actually work in that digital space. There's an appetite there to support employers. Employers do want to recruit people with disabilities, but sometimes it is actually, how do I do it? How can I be supported? And the same way, and that's why I'm looking forward to going down opening the new hub here.
Which we'll talk about, of course.
But it's also giving people the opportunities of work experience, the opportunities of internship, and actually the progression on to more long-stay employment.
Yeah, and the thing about that is you speak to some groups. We have amazing groups in this part of the world, as you would know. But there's some fantastic employers that are really embracing that and seeing the benefits. And then there are others that don't. And then we've got some fantastic organisations that struggle to get work placements for the people that they work with and they've had in the past, and they can see how that benefits. As I say, we need to find out who's doing it right and use that as a model or some sort of a way to say, right, if it's working up there in Letterkenny, well, why is it not working like that down there in Ballymote?
Yeah, and look, it all comes down to leadership and the ability to apply. To be quite honest with you, leadership comes right from the top. So if that employer is able to bring the rest of his staff along with and his HR team or whatever, that ability to bring people with you. And also the leadership within the disabilities organisations, not to be afraid to advocate, to push forward and to make that connection. You are right, where good is good, we need to be signposting and we need to be able to refer people to go and have a look at so as that they can have the confidence in. But we do need to improve the number of people with disabilities that are employed in the state.
Yeah, of course. Now, I mean, obviously, your responsibility with the Department of Children, I'm not sure it falls directly into that department, but we also had the very worrying but welcomed comments from the retired judge, whose name just escapes me at the moment, as it relates to our care of, the state's care of troubled children. Now, it's unimaginable that young people, when we're charged with protecting them or whatever, that find themselves in the situations they do. But unfortunately, it's going to happen. What we don't expect to happen is that when these troubled children come into the care of the state, that their experiences are compounded negatively.
Absolutely, and I do welcome the commentary of the judge. I also welcome the commentary of the children's rapporteur yesterday evening. And I, in opposition, would have been very much critical of actually, and also critical of what is the responsibility of the state. The children we talk about are our most vulnerable, but they are our responsibility. And how they are looked after, and I no doubt it's a priority for Minister O'Gorman, not speaking for him, but I do know it is, that there has to be a complete review of actually how children are supported and cared for. We should be able, in the confidence, believe that when we place a child into care, that child gets maximum care, the opportunities of education, the opportunities to reconnect back with their family if that is the right thing for them. But there should never be the fear that any more wrong would come to that child.
Yeah, okay. As I say, again, just hopefully now we do look at that, and the one thing we should be able to get right is the care of our children, I think. I want to make sure we have time to talk about your visit to Dunloe, the community inclusion in Dunloe, the hub, because I also want to get a couple of words with you on the Brandon report. So, but I want to make sure you're up here to talk about the Dunloe thing. So talk to me about the community inclusion Donegal hub.
Yes, so I'm down here later. Or in, after I leave here, I go across.
Very hard to keep track of where you are.
Yeah, I go across the road. Go across the road, and we're going to open the Donegal Inclusion Hub. Edel Quinn is there along with her team within the HEC. So what is it about? The Donegal Inclusion Hub is actually a person-centred new directions hub, where actually the person at the centre chooses to work to their best of their ability, supported by the staff. They also, and we talked about a minute ago, is in actually looking at what are their strengths, to work to the person's strengths, but also what ambitions have they in further education, or what ambitions have they in relation to employment, or where
so
would
it's like instead of trying to get in a whole group of individuals to fit into one's restrictive system, we have a system that adapts to each individual.
Yes, it's putting the person at the centre.
Yeah,
it's working with the person. It's listening to the voices of, and in actual fact, that is a change in the dial as well. As opposed to people going into a big room, sitting with all the chairs around in a circle, and whatever entertainment would be provided, we're now actually saying we're going right into the middle. Where is the hubs within the community? This is a lively spot down this end of Donegal that I'm in this morning, and that is very welcome, that people with disability are absolutely absorbed into, that can feel that positive energy and get to know their community as well, and feel confident that if they walk out their door, they will recognise a face that they'll know, because they'll just become part and parcel of it. And maybe from that, then you will see that confidence grow within employers, because they get to know people that they will be able to give that placements for. So it's person-centred approach. These are really positive developments, and I believe strongly in it, that no longer are we going to have individuals with disabilities siloed away. There should be no more of that.
Yeah, indeed. OK, and we'll speak more to the people behind it locally as well. Can you ask Minister Rabbit when the promised new motorised transport grant and mobility allowance and the promised replacement for PWDI will be activated? This comes up a lot on this programme, as you can imagine. It's a strange old convoluted situation.
Yes, and so what I did was I chaired that working group for the last 12 months. The report is now done. I know exactly what funding is being spent across all the different departments with disability funding. So I have given over to the Department of Finance. To be very fair to Minister McGrath, he has already used and stretched the bandwidth within the department in the fact that people who in the past couldn't get access to the motorised grant, we expanded it there. The Lee Gath case might have only been for 28, but actually it's a step in the right direction. It's a really positive move.
It seems like it's almost designed to frustrate.
Yeah, but look, I'm very, very focused on the mobility allowance. I think that removal of the mobility allowance back a number of years ago, I would be in favour of its reinstatement.
Yeah, okay. A person believes that grouping intellectual and physical disabilities together is wrong.
Physical and intellectual, they're entitled to their opinion.
Exactly,
But look, we all talk about integration. So, like, and we should have more people, and it shouldn't be all just disabilities. We should all be integrating equally.
To integrate people with a disability more broadly, but then to segregate within, it would seem
wrong.
Yeah, okay. There is concern, as you know, that there are foot dragging or delays in relation to the government dealing with the findings of the Brandon report. This is horrendous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I won't, whoever says that, or if it's your own opinion, I agree with
it. It's a newspaper article.
Yeah. So, but that I don't disagree with that whatsoever. So I had always said that it would, if I could get into the other department, because I found it impossible to achieve what I want to achieve within health, that within 3 months, I would hope to have a new grouping established. I'm now in the department within the 3 months, and we are now at our final stages of putting in place that reassurance look back piece that I want to give to the families. Mm-hmm. I also want to give to the workers here, but I also need to be confident as the minister that what I has happened wouldn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So I am putting in place, as I say, the final document is being just put together for an independent piece. I want to welcome what Bernard Gloucester did like 2 Sundays ago, where he himself has said he's putting in place his own independent piece. That was the wider piece in relation to nursing homes, but he did say, and he could possibly look at the Brandon piece. Absolutely. But I made a commitment to the people of Donegal that I would do my own reassurance piece of work. I'm still committed to doing that piece of work. Mm-hmm. And I do welcome Bernard's indications that he's looking at that wider reassurance. I genuinely think with the amount of regulations, you would think it is all perfect. So families need to be reassured as what happened.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And you're very busy, so I'll let you out away in 2 minutes, or you'll just get up walk out if I don't. But Minister, you say for instance with the not wishing to conflate, but the recent RTE scandal. You know, who's accountable? No one's accountable. People can leave. People don't get called to account. We're not talking about a prison sentence here, but accountability. But we've been so reassured that things are going to change in RTE. Cultural changes, massive month. And then we've got something like this as it relates to really important services in Donegal and more widely. There is again that sense that no one is responsible. Whoever may be responsible maybe has moved on, and still people don't feel reassured that this can't happen again or that this isn't happening again. So that's where the conflation comes from, that we get this brilliant reassurance over €345,000 yet on something that affects people so real like this. There is that not same level of comfort about how this isn't happening. This is how we're going to make sure it won't happen. And this is how we're going to change.
Absolutely. So you can't have all these reports and somebody independent to everybody that wrote the reports outside of the jurisdiction needs to come and sit down and look at where we are with the services today and where we've come from over the last 6 or 7 years, and has to be able categorically. And the report has to come to me, the minister. I don't want a report going to the HSE. I welcome what Bernard's doing, but the report will go to Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
I want a report coming to me. I need to be able to publish my own report as to what was the findings out of reading all those reports and where we are today. I want it to be that positive piece, but I won't absolutely sugarcoat it. I think the public have a right to know, and it needs to be shared with the people of Donegal. I also think that in actual fact, the sooner this happens, the better, because I need my confidence to know that learnings have been found.
Yeah. OK, Minister, thank you. Enjoy the journey over to Dunloe. It is beautiful if you haven't made it already. And I'm sure you'll get a wonderful welcome there. Thanks for your time today.
You.
Really do appreciate it. That is Minister Anne Rabbitt. Back with more shortly. OK, you're very welcome back to the programme. And we're joined on it now by Maxi Corran, who has confirmed yesterday that he's stepping away from his role as Donegal Senior Ladies Manager. And in a statement, the Donegal LGFA County Board said it regretted the decision, but thanked Maxi for his time, commitment and dedication to the Donegal Ladies footballers over the past 6 years. And of course, wished him luck in future. Maxi, good morning to you. When did you make the decision?
Morning, Greg. Yeah, look, you know, I think as the year went on, and you know, the struggles we were having early on and the ups and downs, I think probably along the way you probably realised that this was maybe the end of the road for myself and maybe a few of the girls. You know, 6 years as a right while and one job for the group of girls to listen to the one voice. So you know, it probably during the year it became apparent that it was getting near the end of the line, but look, we just probably, when we got out of the arena on Sunday, we probably realised that yeah, that was the time to go, and so it was, I think, an easy enough decision in the end.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a tough and easy decision at the same time, because it's a huge commitment over 6 years, but also you talk about, you know, maybe players who are moving away from the game themselves, but you've also had a great opportunity to see the new flock that are coming through, and part of you may be excited about bringing them on or seeing what they could achieve, but I suppose you just had to make the decision for yourself too.
Yeah, look, you know, I think the future is good for Donegal. We were put into a situation this year where we had to blood some very young girls very quick and very early and throw them in at the deep end. And look, I think that's been probably the most pleasing thing of all for the whole year, was the way the younger girls have stepped up and you know, a lot has been made about our older girls, and some came back and some didn't, and the contribution they made. But like, I think for me, the big change in our season and the big transformation came from the young girls, you know, who as I say, grew up very fast. You know, we have a number of younger girls in that squad that, you know, played over the last five or six games, you know, three or four games in the championship, and they were just brilliant. Your Abigail Temple of Soakers, a lot instead of it, Abigail, and you know, Carefree, their goalkeeper, came in for the first time, never played for Donegal before at any age grade. Kate Dowd, she's only 16 years of age. And then, you know, Tara Hegarty, Amy Boyd Carr, Roisin Rogers, Katie Long, Susie White, you know, the emergence of those guys to become, you know, real standout performers for the team at their tender ages, you know, was very pleasing. And yeah, look, we have a minor team in an All Ireland semi final on Wednesday night as well. And you know, there's a number of those that I'm sure are ready to step up. So yeah, from that perspective, look, it's exciting, all right. But look, I think just the thing maybe needed a wee change, a wee freshening up, and a change of direction and a new voice. And it's not that in any way you're lacking motivation to go or losing interest in the job or the girls. I just felt that maybe the time was right for them to have a new direction.
Yeah, and Maxie, did they probably had an understanding of where you were at, but were there any efforts made to say, you know, one more year?
Well, I think it's been kind of one more year for the last three or four years, but look, I think to give the older girls their credit, you know, they've been kind of hanging on for the last year or two. You know, there's a number of them, you know, heading for their mid-30s, and you know, some of these people are married women that have postponed having families and, you know, and starting families, having kids, you know, for just to give their all to Donegal. And you know, people have been putting their bodies at huge risk for, you know, for serious complications down the line, you know. The contribution of the likes of Karen Guthrie and Niamh Hegarty from an injury perspective, about the, you know, the risks that they have put their body to play for Donegal this year especially, you know, is unbelievable really. And you know, it's only in time people have realised, you know, what Karen has done, and you know, the risks that she, you know, endures every day she goes out with her injury history. And and for them to keep going it's a humbling experience for me. And I there wasn't really a discussion at any stage, you know, but about who would go or when we go. And but look, I think it's the story's not about me, Greg, to be honest. You know, I think it's about, you know, the Donegal group over the last 6 years. You know, when I came in at 2017, you know, we tried to change a lot of things, and we tried to, you know, improve the thing for the better. I had been fortunate to be involved with Donegal men prior to that, so you know, I had a good experience of seeing how a proper setup should work, and I try to implement as much of that as we could. And you know, we put huge pressure on the girls. We made a massive ask of them in terms of their commitment and buy-in. And you know, I think we've got a lot right over the last 6 years, and we've been fortunate to come at a time when ladies football has been a massive transformation and an upsurge in popularity, and we're very fortunate to be part of that. And you know, this Donegal group have really taken ladies football and Donegal to a whole new level. And you know, I think that was evidenced in the crowd that turned up on Sunday in Ballyfey. You know, we were completely humbled when we came out to see the crowd in the stand. And, you know, the game delayed by a few minutes to get all the crowd in. And, you know, and that's you know, it's a brilliant indictment for the girls and how they have captured the imagination of the Donegal people. And, you know, I think, look, it's important maybe we didn't have a better show or take the game, you know, closer to the wire. But, you know, that's just the way it went on Sunday. But again, look, I think it's a testament to what those girls have achieved in terms of their standing in Donegal. And
do you know what's amazing, Maxie, too? It's the young girls, and I know them, and it's not just girls, it'll be boys too, but primarily girls that are out talking out now for their local team, that have ambitions of one day playing seniors for their local team or even lining out for Donegal. I mean, the girls get that, don't they? The positive impact they've had on thousands of young people, particularly young girls in, you know, you can be what you can see. And that's what they have done and continue and will continue to do. But it's remarkable as an individual like myself to actually see it happening before my eyes. Young girls, as I say, inspired to try and be like their heroes.
Yeah, and look, you know, we're actually here in convoy this morning. You know, the Donegal senior ladies have taken on to run, you know, a couple of summer camps over the next couple of weeks, and you know, the kids have signed up on their hundreds, you know, as they here in convoy this morning with Niamh McLaughlin, Karen Guthrie, Katie Hare, Nene Boyle Carr, Niamh Carr, Shannon McGrady. Over in Donegal Town, you have Niamh Boyle and Emer Galler and Susie White and Roisin Rogers and, you know, these kind of people, and all the girls and the squad will be here at some point in the week. And, you know, that's another testament to how, you know, how important they feel it is to reach out to the next generation, as you say, and, you know, and how available they have made themselves, you know, to the next generation at every turn of, you know, that whatever's been asked of them, you know, they've tried to do it. And look, we are very aware that, you know, they are the role model for the next generation. And, you know, and I say the kids have signed up in their hundreds for the different camps across the county and to come and meet the girls and just be coached by them. And look, it's a lovely experience, a lovely sight here this morning in convoy. And I know it's the same over in the other camps as well. So, yeah, look, it's as you say, look, the younger girls are really taking on what the older girls have done and seeing what they've done, and the participation numbers in ladies football is massive. And, you know, there's a lot being made, protests nationwide about, you know, the treatment of ladies footballers and one thing or another. And, you know, I think one side of that that's not been acknowledged, and that's the role of society and the acknowledgement of the great efforts that the female cohort is making in sport and the great strides. And, you know, as I say, it was unbelievable to see the Donegal crowd that came on Sunday to support them. But, you know, we do need people to get behind, you know, the girls on a more regular basis, whether that be a club level or county level. And it's not just in Gaelic football either, you know. You know, the quality of entertainment provided by lady footballers in the GAA sphere at this point is the one I'm most familiar with, you know, is second to none. And people that have come to watch in recent times have seen that. And look, people need to get behind them. It's not, you know, talk is cheap now. Stop talking about, you know, that they should have this and they should have that. Until people actually get out and support them and come in their numbers and more money becomes available, then girls can get treated at this exact same level as the boys. Now, look, we're very fortunate in Donegal. Our county board has been brilliant throughout my time, and you know, and the business fraternity in Donegal have been absolutely phenomenal. You know, Donna Kelly, Donna Byrd in MCR, Eddie Tobin, Austin Daly, McCafferty's Byrd, Declan Boyle, and these people, you know, they've just been absolutely brilliant, and our girls have wanted for nothing. And, you know, I know the protest going along nationwide, but it's actually nothing to do with the Donegal girls. They're just standing with their sisters throughout the country, and everybody's looking for the same thing. But our girls have been so well treated by, you know, the efforts of the county board and the business fraternity, who have really, really supported us, and the girls are really indebted to that and really appreciative of all the help that's been given, you know, by the different entities. So yeah, look, it's as I say, a rising tide, you know, raises all boats, and you know, I think that's the way it is in Donegal at the minute. But everybody's got to keep the momentum going now, and as I say, get out and support the girls whenever you can, and, you know, not just, you know, give I suppose patronising pats on the back and say they're great and they're doing brilliant, you know, because that's the one thing that's going to change everything and ladies sport is people actually getting behind them and coming out and supporting them and watching them in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Maxi, here we go. You mentioned, of course, your involvement with the men's previously, and you've done 6 years with the ladies. You know, your CV's only, you know, grown and grown since, the highs and the lows, being able to adapt mid-season, talk players back in to rejoining the squad and delivering results along those lines. Are you interested, or could you be persuaded to be interested in the management of the men's teams now? Is this right for you in your managerial career? Is it something that would interest and excite you, Maxi?
Well, at this point in time, it's not something I would have any interest in. You know, yeah, look, down the line, it's the pinnacle for any manager or coach, you know, to be involved with their county team. And look, as they have been blessed to have been involved with every Donegal team from under 14 to senior at some point or other. But look, just not at this time. I think, you know, the Donegal men situations at a crucial turning point, and I think they need a real, you know, high profile figure now to come in and redirect and capture the imagination of the people and the players. And I mentioned, you know, the need for everybody to get behind the girls, same as the case now with the boys. And but look, I just don't feel I'm the person for that role at the minute. And
could you be convinced you are? I think you're being quite modest there in terms of big names and what have you, Maxi. Is it just not right for you in your life more generally at the moment, or could you be convinced as part of a team to have a role in it? Your county might need you, Maxi.
well, look, it's not me that needs you, Greg, to be honest. You know, I think I think it's a great skill in this life to know where your limits are and know your range. And as I say, that's just, I don't think it's the job for me at this point. I don't think I'm the answer to that particular problem for Donegal. And look, I wish them well in their pursuits. And look, there are some great people around and some big names even within Donegal, and you know, high profile figures. And I just don't mean to throw out the term big names, you know, loosely. I think, you know, people, you know, need to be struck and taken by a name or a manager, and there has to be a certain amount of aura.
When you talk about that, when you talk about the big names, are you maybe, sorry Maxine, I won't keep you much longer, I know you're busy up in Convoy, are you, you're not necessarily talking about the fans, are you? Are you talking about the dressing room, that they need a big name, someone that can command respect?
Look, there definitely is a bit of that, you know, there is a bit of that, but I just think the, you know, the GAA fraternity in Donegal, both male and female level, are, you know, they're crying out for you know, a real strong leader to come now, and as I mentioned earlier, about to raise all, you know, to raise all boats, mm-hmm. and you know, to raise the tide and a bit of optimism. You know, we're going to a club championship now, and you know, we hope that there's a good bit of positivity. You know, the Donegal boys have done tremendous over the last couple of years, and I don't think they've been given the credit they deserve for their efforts. Like, being a county footballer, whether it be as a manager, coach, whatever, it's a tough gig. It's a thankless job. A lot of them, there's great highs, and you know, a lot of the pleasure and enjoyment we get for it is not seen by other people. It's the journey and the day-to-day working with people and getting to know people and watching kids grow and develop, and you know, helping them in different aspects of their life, you know, not just their football career. You know, I think a lot of the stuff we do is unseen in terms of the other things that we do for kids and their development, and you know, that's the enjoyment side of it. But look, it's been a tough road for Donegal, and I think people are too quick to criticise based on results, and I know it's a results driven business, but you know, I think there are so many people there. You know, there are donkeys out there sitting behind keyboards, you know, writing all the time and criticising people for their efforts. And, you know, they haven't got a clue of what's going on and what, you know, how much effort is put in by people. And, you know, I think the public need to at times maybe take a step back and appreciate what people do and the effort that they make, and give them time. Like, this is a young Donegal men's group at the minute, no more than the girls. And, you know, they need time. They're not going to be winning the All-Ireland this year or next. And, you know, they need time to grow, and people need to get behind that. And I think that's where the role of the next manager is so important. And they just, I think if they could get somebody that captures the imagination of Donegal people, coaches, clubs, businesses, supporters alike, you know, the whole lot needs to get behind. Look, we've got a lot of negative publicity in recent times, and, you know, over things at administration level as well. And look, you just want people to try and put it behind them now, and put you know, the best foot forward, and get the right people in the right places. Look, there has to be changes at different levels, and you know, new personnel need to come in, and you know, and a real freshness is needed, I think, at this point. And but look, hopefully, they find that right person sooner rather than later, and you know, when we all get a chance to move forward.
Yeah, and I think it's really important what you say, that the public, the fans, in inverted commas, have a real role to play in the future success of the Donegal team as well. It's not just about being there to jump on the bandwagon when the success is delivered. It's to be there as we build towards that success. Maxi, listen, thanks for your service, and thanks for your time today, and enjoy the spare time. Inevitably, I'm sure you'll find something to fill it, but in terms of no doubts about that. But anyway, listen, thank you very much indeed, and we do appreciate your time, not just now in this interview, but over the last 6 years as well.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
For your time, Greg, and support of the station. Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye. Take care. Maxi Curran there.
Hope is something we give to each other. Thanks to your donations, Pieta's 24-hour crisis helpline is able to receive over 100,000 calls and texts a year. Your support means that all of Pieta's vital services are free and available nationwide, which means that free suicide prevention therapy, delivered by qualified therapists, is always just a phone call away. To make a life-saving gift today, go to pieta.ie. Pieta. Ending suicide, beginning hope.
Hi, Paddy here at Shane Connolly Cars in Donegal Town. Are you looking to upgrade your car? With Shane Connolly Cars, you'll find makes and models for every budget. Great finance options, and we also accept trade-ins. Check out shaneconnollycars.com or call in to us at Shane Connolly Cars from Lonaher Road, Donegal Town.
Hey Matt, you're our favourite customer. And so are you, Niamh. Oh right, you're all our favourite. That's why new and existing Vodafone broadband customers get the same price. You can now pay just €40 a month and your bill won't double at the end of your contract. So everyone gets a fair price. Find out more at vodafone.ie/broadband. Vodafone, together we can. Subject to signing up to Vodafone Home 500 megabit fibre broadband, 12-month minimum contract. Price subject to annual price adjustment of CPI plus 3% each April. For terms, see vodafone.ie/terms.
Don't miss an incredible night of country music with Derek Ryan at the Highlands Hotel Glanties on Friday, July 28th. Tickets are €20 and available from ticketstop.ie or by phoning the Highlands Hotel reception. That's Derek Ryan at the Highlands Hotel Glanties, Friday, July 28th.
Okay, so we were chatting to former GP earlier on, and he was questioning why it's inexplicable that we have a disease like cancer, which people get a lot of support in terms of fighting it, yet a disease like Alzheimer's doesn't. People have to give up their homes effectively for care. It's not supported in the same way. And during that interview, it was mentioned of a new drug which is being held by some as a turning point in the fight against Alzheimer's. Dr. Laura O'Philbin is of the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, research and policy manager, in fact, and joins us now. Laura, thank you very much for your time.
No problem. Good afternoon.
Right. So what do we know of donanemab?
So donanemab is an antibody that targets the underlying biology of Alzheimer's disease. So people who have Alzheimer's disease have this kind of sticky, toxic protein built up in their brain called amyloid. And donanemab works with our body's immune system to kind of bind to this amyloid and to break it down. And that is what's thought to slow down the progression of the disease. So we got the full kind of picture of the data yesterday at a conference in Amsterdam. So Eli Lilly, the US pharmaceutical company who's manufacturing the drug, presented the results of their phase 3 clinical trial, and the results are looking quite positive. So that's a very exciting space to be in.
So when we talk about the drug being found to slow clinical decline by up to 35%, that's 35% of people or 35% of each person? You know, how would this improve people's outcomes generally if it delivers as the trials suggest it might?
So it's a slowdown in the rate of clinical decline. So it's really important to note that, you know, that this drug will not help people to improve. It will just slow down the progression. So it slows it down by 35%. And it's thought, you know, on average, this was equated to around a 4 to 7 month slowdown in progression in people in the trial, and the trial was 18 months. It should also be noted that there was 40% less decline in people's ability to perform activities of daily living. And when I say this, what I mean is managing finances, driving, engaging in hobbies, you know, chatting about current events, things that you or I might not really think about on a daily basis, but they're actually really, really important to people's well-being.
So clearly, if this is rolled out or funded, it comes down to getting this drug to people as early as possible. Are we set up in this country to diagnose people with Alzheimer's as early as we possibly can, so we could maximise the benefits of these advances like this drug?
Yeah, you're completely right there. You know, this drug is only suitable for people in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease, and actually it's most effective for people in the earliest stages. In Ireland, we definitely need to work on, you know, earlier diagnosis, but we also need other infrastructure for drugs like these, you know, infusion suites, because it's delivered intravenously, so through a vein in the arm, kind of like the way chemotherapy is delivered. We need MRI scanners to assess amyloid, to look at side effects. And, you know, this drug is not approved yet by any European regulators, and it's this particular drug is not yet approved by the FDA. We won't have that result until the end of the year. But we are in a space where there are, you know, 140 different treatments for Alzheimer's disease currently under clinical trial. And, you know, there's high hopes that some of them will make it through, just like this drug has. This drug has shown really positive results. It's not perfect. It's not a cure. It's not without its side effects. It's not ideal. But we're at a really kind of important scientific juncture. Yeah. And while we're waiting for the regulators, what we can do in Ireland is think about, OK, how do we get our health system ready now to actually go out and deliver this drug?
Yes, because, you know, we'll see from time to time, if you open up a tabloid, there will be some small down the left or right column about some breakthrough potentially. And it's based off some opinion of one professor somewhere in America or something. And I'm not in any way discrediting that, but this is different. This is far more advanced the way we're talking about this now, isn't it, Laura? You know, there's far more room for some hope as to how things are developing in the area of care of Alzheimer's.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these are full-scale, multi-country clinical trials that cost billions. You know, they're very well regulated, they're very well looked after. You know, so, and there was, you know, almost 2,000 people took part in this particular clinical trial. It was, you know, to get to stage three of the clinical trial, you actually have to do years of research before that. So this is a credible treatment option, I would say, for Alzheimer's disease. There's a similar drug called lecanemab that also targets amyloid in the brain. That was actually approved by the FDA there in the States. So that's the US regulator. That was approved 2 weeks ago. So that is now licensed for use in the US.
Okay, so encouraging. Just finally, Laura, as I mentioned just in the preamble there, we heard from a former GP here in the area who was questioning why we don't fund and treat people with Alzheimer's the same way as cancer. For example, someone who might have to sell their property or engage in the Fair Deal scheme. Does your society have a position on that? I know you're in the area of research and policy, so if that is outside of your wheelhouse in that regard, I fully understand that, and there's no issue in that. But is that something that you have a comment on, Laura?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, even from the research perspective. You know, there's far more research into cancer than there is into dementia. There's far more research published in cancer than there is in dementia. It's not really clear, I suppose, why that is. Mm. I guess my personal opinion, this isn't necessarily the opinion of the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, but, you know, it could be linked potentially to kind of an unconscious ageism. You know, people associate Alzheimer's and they associate dementia with an older person's disease, where cancer is associated across the lifespan. So there could be an element to that there. You know, there is still a real stigma with Alzheimer's disease and with dementia. You know, we used to have a stigma around cancer, and now thankfully we've reached a point where there is no stigma for cancer. You know, it's not that dreaded C word that people used to talk about, but we are still trying to break down those barriers for dementia here in Ireland.
All right. Thank you so much. Fascinating insight on both areas there. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Laura O'Philbin, who's the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland's Research and Policy Manager. So anything that gives us some hope. I'm sure you've been kept up all night at times wondering how much honey does one bee make in its entire life. And I joke, but it's actually really quite interesting, isn't it? Well, our own Donna Marie Doherty today at 12:30 p.m. Join her for Ours to Protect to find out as she talks to Thomas Ellis of Donegal Bees. Ours to Protect is funded by Commissioner Mann with the television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info. So for interesting conversation, we actually really are quite interested in bees in this part of the world. Over the last year, I've spoken to young people who are developing particular honeys, and we've spoken to beekeepers and what have you. So there will be a great deal of interest in that. That's at 12:30 as part of John Bresson's Around the Northwest programme. hello, Greg. Would any of your listeners know a cream or a cure for rosacea, a redness on the face? Thanks. That comes in from Anne. Anne, we were talking about rosacea to a skin specialist not so long ago. But if anyone wants to recommend a cream, I'm more than happy to pass that on. Another caller says, I have a disability, but we need extra money from 1 week to the next. Nothing left. I also feel anybody with a disability should not have to pay for prescriptions. And I would agree with you. Was in Tesco last night and delighted to see a big queue at the checkout as people are getting wise to these self-service tills, as jobs will be lost if people use them. I'm not really sure about jobs being displaced, because I've spoken to people in retail and it frees people up to do other things. I'm not arguing for them. As I said yesterday on the show, I don't use them because I find them confusing. Above anything else, so I'm not arguing for them. By the way, it's just I've spoken to some people in retail that say it's not actually displacing people, but they're able to do other things. That being said, that you go into shops and it seems the hassle of going over and sorting it out when the machine fails or people can't work it, and there's people leaving tills to go and do that, and it still doesn't seem like a very smooth system to me as of yet. The government going off now on a 9-week break at a time when the country in a mess. Homeless numbers rising, children in pain waiting years for operations, no holidays for any of them. Food prices rising, rents and house prices rising, so many other urgent issues. Politicians deaf to it all. Shows what they think of us. Why do we put them in time after time? Well, doesn't matter who you're putting in, they still take the 9 weeks holidays. I'm sure they'll say they're very active in their local communities, but it is kind of funny that you you know, you have with the RT payments thing, you had a group of politicians looking for their minute of fame, scrutinising the culture from within RTE and how things must change and it's this, that and the other, and then off for 9 weeks holidays, fully paid. There's a cultural change there. Maybe sometimes people need to look inward as well as outward. Hi, Greg. I know all about the roadworks at Newtown Cunningham. We're going down the road yesterday. It was a disgrace how long we had to wait to even get to Newtown Cunningham. Why don't they do the roadworks at night or wait until the winter months when maybe the roads would be a wee bit quieter? I would say the short days would bring their own complications in terms of prolonging them. I don't know why some works are nighttime, some are daytime. I really don't know the ins and outs of that. As I say, I hate to speak personally because it's the road I'd be on, but recently travelling through roadworks, every morning the road, more of it was done. I was stopped at traffic lights for a total of 6 minutes through the entire process. So that worked well for me, if you know what I mean. And that's because they were being done at night. I don't know why those roadworks aren't being done at night. But listen, thank you so much to all of you who have joined us today. We really appreciate it, you know, and we don't just say that, we genuinely do. Me and the team here never take for granted the support we have from listeners. And for those of you who choose to watch the show as well, you're all really important, and thank you so very much. And that's why we work so hard for you, not on air as well as on air, but behind the scenes as well. So for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and Niamh, flat out the show as well, have a lovely day. Stay tuned. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest after the news headlines with Michaela at 12. Chat to you on Wednesday.